Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. From the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Well, it isn't actually Mike Novak on the radio this morning. Good morning, everybody. This is Beth Botts.
And Heather Fry.
And Heather Fry sitting in for Mike Novak. Mike is off at his high school reunion.
Isn't that fantastic? I wonder if he feels 18 while he's running around the gymnasium.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And
he'll act like it, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I want to see pictures of Mike in like a corsage
or Letterman sweater.
Yeah,
big old Letterman sweater. But he graduated in the 70s.
Okay.
So was that? I think that was pre the platform shoes days, though. I think it was the early 70s.
It was early platform shoes.
Yeah,
it was early platform.
That's
shoes.
What I want to see. He said he had a pair.
Oh yeah,
on the show once.
Was he going to wear them?
I want him to, but he won't.
He won't. Well, this is Chicago, the Chicago area's only locally broadcast show on gardening, the environment, and green living. I am, again, Beth Botts, sitting in for Mike Novak today on John Lennon's 71st birthday,
yeah,
if he were still with us.
He would have been 71 today.
He would have been
Boggles 71. Boggles
my mind. Wow. Just amazing. Our guests today include Mary Eisenbach from the Chicago Park District, who is going to update us on the state of the Garfield Park Conservatory, which, as you may all know, was damaged by an awful hailstorm this summer. And we're going to find out what's going on with the repairs to the the conservatory, what's being done to raise money to fix it, what events and so forth are going to be available at the conservatory, because part of the conservatory is still open, and those wonderful gardens all around the conservatory are still open. So Mary's going to be here to talk to us about that. We're going to have Bastian Bauma from Open House Chicago, who's going to talk to us about an event being held by the Chicago Architecture Foundation called Open House Chicago, which throws all sorts of sites at the city of Chicago open to anybody, including all kinds of backstage tours and things. And that's going to take place next weekend, and it includes something called a green trail. So we're going to find out about that. Then we're going to have Lynn McClure from the National Parks Conservation Association, who's going to be talking about our neighborhood national park. Do you know what I mean when I say our neighborhood national park? We're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to have Angela Mason, who runs Windy City Harvest and the Green Ruth Youth Farm for the Chicago Botanic Garden, a wonderful programs to teach job trainees and youth about organic urban agriculture. They run farmers markets. She's going to be here to talk to us about growing fall and winter vegetables and what you can do in your vegetable garden in the fall. So who am I? I'm a writer for a long time about gardening. I'm a University of Illinois Master Gardener. I'm an open lands tree keeper. My blog is at growinginchicago.com. I write for Organic Gardening. I have the cover story in the current issue about Japanese maples. I have a story today in the Chicago Tribune about compost. You can find other stories if you search at chicagotribune.com or just Google me. I'm in the Chicagoland Gardening September-October issue with several stories. So what do we learn from this? What we learn from this is that I do exist, and I write about gardening, and you can find all about it if you hit Google. One thing that I want to talk about is there was a last week, Mike had people from the Landreth Seed Company on the show talking about how close this very old Chicago, very old family-owned mm-hmm. seed company is.
Fifth oldest company in the country.
Oldest seed company in the country.
Yeah.
How close they are to going under and how desperately they need people to place orders and to order their catalog. And apparently they got a really good response from that. If you look at Mike's website at mikenovak.net, you'll see an actual, like, chart
mm-hmm.
on all the people who called in and dialed in and ordered catalogs and are trying to help out Landreth Seed. So I guess what that proves is that somebody must be listening.
There are people out there listening.
There
We've gotten
are people.
Real fan letters and everything, especially in the last, like, 2 months. It seems to have really gotten a lot more feedback, and I think that's the Twitter and the Facebook effect.
The Twitter and the Facebook,
and
yes.
And being able to, because we got letters from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Somebody's listening to us
yes,
in Pennsylvania.
Yes, because we stream at chicagosprogressivetalk.com and at mikenovak.net. You can listen to a stream. So.
Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Pennsylvania is, or at least parts of Pennsylvania, are zones 5, so it must not be totally irrelevant to gardeners in Pennsylvania.
I imagine the soil must be different, though.
The soil's probably very different. Probably.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. I'm, like, speculating.
Yeah.
I'm, like, making this up,
uh-huh.
but I think... soil in Pennsylvania might be a little more acid.
I don't know.
But anyway.
Your guess is better than mine.
So if you're listening today out there, you're not alone.
Yes.
A couple other things to mention. Growing Home, which is a great urban agriculture job training program, is opening up a whole new urban farm next Friday. A second Englewood farm. It's the first urban farm opened under Chicago's new and much more supportive urban agriculture ordinance. So if you want to learn about that, you can go to growinghomeinc.org. And we will post all these links on my blog at growinginchicago.com and on Mike Novak's website.
Yep, a lot of them are already there under the tab that says This Week's Show. So if
yes.
you want to go to the website, you can follow along with us as Beth interviews our guests and see what they're actually doing online. So
and
it's pretty cool.
We, you know, if we mention something else, we'll figure out how to get a link to you on the internet somehow. The Kilburn Park Organic Greenhouse is starting a course on growing organic vegetables in your own backyard on October 22nd. You can learn about that at chicagoparkdistrict.com. And there's an interesting event called Bike the Calumet, which is a 12-mile bicycle tour of Lake Calumet. We have this amazing lake wetland in the city on the south side. That's on October 16th. Sponsored by the Southeast Environmental Task Force. You want to learn more about that, you can go to www.setaskforce.blogspot.com or call 773-646-0438. If you want to call in to ask questions about gardening, anything else that we talk about on the show, you can call in to ask questions at 773-838-WCPT. that is for those of us who really hate when telephone numbers have letters in them. The real telephone number is 773-838-9278. And as soon as we get the computer working here, we're going to be following Mike's Twitter feed, which is at Mike Now. We're going to try to follow my Twitter feed, which is at Chicago Gardener. So if you want to follow along or contribute to our discussion here today, you can do that by any one of a number of means. So my first guest is Mary Eisenbach. Are you there, Mary? Maybe not.
Yes, she should be there now.
Mary, are you there?
Hi, Beth.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being on the radio today.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Mary is Director of Conservatories for the Chicago Park District. And I wanted to ask you, Mary, what's going on at the Garfield Park Conservatory? All these tragic, heartbreaking pictures of smashed glass and skewered plants, which, incidentally, folks, can be found at garfieldconservatory.org. So what's going on, Mary?
Well, you know, we are recovering a bit slowly, but we are certainly recovering. I want people to know that we're open, as you mentioned. We are open, open, open. There are still the Palm House, Sugar from the Sun, and the Children's Garden. Those rooms are still open, and the outside gardens are looking fabulous, especially right now with this last gasp of summer this week. People should come out and to enjoy the place. But as far as repairs go, the fern room is now under a protective winter roof of polycarbonate material. And the holes in the desert house have been repaired, and the holes, the couple holes that we had in Aeroid have been repaired. We are...
So basically what that means is all the plants now have a roof.
No, not all the plants. The plants that are living, that live in our production houses, the plants that are either being grown by us or live in the production houses and wait to be rotated into shows and the display houses, those don't have roofs yet. That's projected to happen by October 31st. And we're praying for warm weather. Right now those plants are all outside.
Right.
And we've just, you know, we've been really blessed by having this, this weather this past 10 days. If things get dicey, we'll just scramble and move everything inside to a temporary holding place. But that should be done by October 31st. And we're still removing glass from the desert house, from the ground in the desert house. As soon as that's finished, we'll be able to open the desert house, which will allow us to open Aeroid.
Yeah.
And the show house should also be under a temporary polycarbonate cover by October 31st, which is important. We won't be replanting that house, but it's important in terms of allowing our visitors to move into Horticulture Hall under cover, so and to protect the heating infrastructure for the rest of the conservatory. So the soil is still 12 inches below grade in that room, so we're going to have to figure out some kind of protective railings. But we are moving along, and I think all the plants will be fine, the plants that we're keeping, let me put it that way.
Have you had a lot of losses among the plants? I mean, some of these plants are close to 100 years old, right?
Yeah, we did have some losses in the fern room. You know, everybody, we talked at the very beginning about how sensitive the ferns are to sunlight and their need for high humidity. And we struggled to provide that for them, and we did a pretty good job. But some of the plants, we still lost a few. The Salmonella, all the ferns in the front of the fern house, people are probably, it might be familiar with that because the sign says, please do not step on the Salmonella, it's very delicate.
Yeah.
Well, that Salmonella was, we had to drive a lift over that Salmonella to get to... To get the lift into the pond so that we could get the glass out of the canopy in the fern room. So the Salmonella is all gone. So slowly but surely, it's giving us an opportunity, though, to do some thinking about how the design of the plant material in the fern room. So, you know, the thing about this disaster is it's been, we see opportunity everywhere.
Well, that's great. I've loved the fern room since I was a child. In case you're not familiar with the conservatory folks, the Garfield Park Conservatory was designed by Jens Jensen, built in 1908. And it's one of the really great masterworks of sort of indoor landscape design in the country, especially the fern room, which is designed to mimic the, or to evoke, I guess, the landscape of the Chicago area at the time of the dinosaurs. And it's just a magical, magical place. So, but, you know, that's only one of the parts of the conservatory that are really, really important to the Chicago area. The conservatory has a long history of hard times. And in the last couple of decades, people have really rallied behind it to rebuild it and do wonderful new things in the conservatory. Mary, I understand you have a fundraising campaign going on.
We do. We have a fundraising campaign called One Paint at a Time. And this initiative has arisen from, obviously, this hail disaster, but like the aeroid room freezing started the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance and the rebirth of the conservatory. You know, this hailstorm is rejuvenating thinking about the conservatory and public support. And, you know, one of the things that amazed me and was incredibly heartwarming about the hailstorm was the support that we got from the public, people telling us stories about how important it was and people making donations because that was the place where they proposed to their fiancé. Or, you know, within days, we heard from people in Seattle and Arizona. I mean, you tell the story about the people from Pennsylvania buying seeds. I mean, we got checks from all over the United States, people trying to protect their memories of Garfield Park Conservatory. And, you know, our goal now is to help people build new memories in Garfield Park Conservatory. So the One Paint at a Time campaign is an opportunity for people to donate. They can go online and donate. And
that's at garfieldconservatory.org, am I right?
That is at garfieldconservatory.org. It's right on the front page of the website. You can go on, and at $250, you can buy a pane of glass.
Oh.
If that's too pricey, go in with friends, get together with a group and buy a pane of glass. We are working right now on an application where we will be building a virtual roof where people's names will be on that each piece of pane that they buy.
Not literally, but virtually.
Virtually, not literally. We are a historic landmark, and that would be very tricky. Plus,
yeah,
you know, we whitewashed those roofs, so that wouldn't work very well either. But virtually, yeah, we're pulling into the 21st century now, and we're going to build a virtual fun roof with this campaign. So, and there are other side fundraisers, not only online, but, you know, you can come to the conservatory gift shop and buy, we have wristbands that say Garfield Park Conservatory Unbreakable on them. We have fundraisers, for instance, on October 22nd, we are having a plant rescue sale. And that is where we are allowing the public to come in and buy plants that we are having to thin out because we are only going to have half the production house space that we normally do.
So you can actually take home a green and living memory of the Garfield Park Conservatory. Not that it's gone.
Not that it's gone, but you can. We're just spreading the love, Beth. So,
we're spreading the love, the green love, the green plants from the Chicago from the Garfield Park Conservatory. And the Garfield Park Conservatory is in Garfield Park, oddly enough, it's at 300 North Central Park Avenue in Chicago, right by the Conservatory Green Line L stop. So it's not that hard to get to.
No, it's not.
And
the plant sale is going to be in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So at the north end of the conservatory, it's going to be from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., or until all the plants are gone. So that's coming up. That's an example of a fundraiser. You know, so, and we had so many people step up, groups from the outside, hold fundraisers for us. We had, oh my gosh, we had a fundraiser, a musical benefit, a Lincoln Park Zoo held a benefit for us. I mean, it's just been amazing. I mean, and we didn't ask anybody to do this. They just came forward and said, do you mind if we raise money for you?
Oh, gee. And I wish people would say that to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so great. It's just, I mean, that's the kind of thing that's come out of this. It's like, oh my goodness, people really love this place. You know, when we toil day after day, we're in that conservatory, and you know, of course, we love that work, too. But sometimes we forget why we do it.
Yeah.
And then the public steps forward, and they remind us why we do it. And it's a great morale booster for us.
One of the things that I noticed in the Garfield Park newsletter this month is you're having tours for $10 or $12. People can get, like, the backstage tour of the conservatory?
Yeah, you know, we, for a long time, Lincoln Park Conservatory has this fabulous docent program, and they offer tours for the conservatory, which is great. And we always had that inquiry about Garfield Park Conservatory. So the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance has organized trained volunteers, and they will be giving these docent tours of Garfield Park Conservatory. So they're $12, and I believe they're cheaper, or I don't know if they're free for members or they're less expensive for members. So that's an opportunity. And then, of course, as you mentioned, you're going to be talking to Bastion about the Open House Chicago. We will be a site for Open House Chicago as well next weekend.
Yeah. Bastion, are you there? Well, you're not quite on the phone yet, but Bastion?
Yes.
You there?
I am. I'm here.
All right. Well, we've got Bastion Bauma from the Chicago Architecture Foundation. And what I've asked him to talk about today is, as Mary just mentioned, the Garfield Park Conservatory is one of the sites in this really exciting event that's going to be taking place next weekend called Open House Chicago. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, the Architecture Foundation, the Chicago Architecture Foundation, is sponsoring a weekend festival of free, behind-the-scenes access to more than 130 of Chicago's great places and spaces, including the Garfield Park Conservatory, which is a hub location in Garfield Park. And we have sites all over the city that are free for the public to visit over the weekend, October 15th and 16th, mainly from 9 to 5, although there's a website that has precise timing for some of the sites. And there are no tickets needed, no reservations needed. The itinerary is available. The available sites are on the website, openhousechicago.org, www.openhousechicago.org. And it's completely free, a citywide event, and it should be very popular.
And you have something among the many, many sites that are available, is something called the Green Trail. Tell me about the Green Trail.
Well, that's an innovation that we've introduced this year, which is the inaugural year for openhousechicago.org. And the Green Trail links a series of sites that are connected to one of the themes of Open House Chicago 2011, and that is sustainability. We have two big ideas involved in this event, that is community and sustainability, how buildings work to support the economic vitality of communities, and to illuminate what a terrific resource Chicago has in terms of its buildings. Its design and architecture legacy is really unrivaled in many respects. The Green Trail links together buildings that are particularly representative of the idea of sustainability, either through their own design as new construction or adaptively reused buildings that have taken structures that were built as long as 100 years ago and repurposed them for modern applications at the same time, retrofitting them with great new technology.
That's recycling.
Absolutely. And nothing is really greener than taking an old building and modernizing it and using it in a new and different way with the latest technology and systems. So we have 17 sites stretching from the north end in Rogers Park, West Ridge, down as far as the former USX, U.S. Steel site, which is now a master plan 600-acre development called Lakeside, Chicago Lakeside Development. So between them, we have 17 sites that really are some of the most interesting and dynamic sites that you'd ever want to see, and you're going to get behind-the-scenes access free for one weekend.
And among the sites I noticed on the website are the Center for Neighborhood Technology, which has a great green roof. If you want to see a green roof and what it really looks like, you can get up there and see what it's really like. The Chicago Center for Green Technology. I'm sorry, that's at the Chicago Center for Green Technology.
Well, yeah, there's both the Center for Neighborhood Technology, and that's in Bucktown. It's one of the green trail sites, as well as the Chicago Center for Green Technology. There's a lot of green going on. And, you know, Chicago is one of the greenest big cities in the world and certainly one of the leading green and sustainable design cities in the country, with more LEED certified buildings. And LEED is the U.S. Green Building Council's rating system, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Many Chicago buildings have LEED certification, platinum, gold, silver. And the bar is set very high in Chicago. Green roofs, permeable surfaces for parking, new windows, high-tech heating and ventilation systems, all combine to have created a real energy in Chicago in the direction of sustainable design that will pay dividends many, many generations down the road. It's really remarkable.
Among the other sites on here, I notice, of course, Garfield Park and the Conservatory are on this tour. You can go to the site at openhousechicago.org, and they have this cool app thing called your itinerary builder.
Right.
So you can choose among, you don't have to go to the whole green trail. You can choose among the different sites. You can choose other great architecture in Chicago. And I love this kind of thing because it really, even if you've lived in Chicago all your life, it kind of forces you to go out and discover things about the city that you never knew before or had never seen before.
I think if I can interrupt, it's absolutely, you're right. There are five community areas, and I suggest, rather than trying to do the whole green trail, because that's quite a hike, is to pick a community area that you're interested in, and there are green trail representative sites in each of the communities. So it's either Rogers Park, West Ridge, East Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Little Village, Bronzeville, and Hyde Park, and even downtown. Pick one of those communities and then find the green trail candidate that interests you, and then find the other sites that are also in those communities. It's very convenient. Within each community, we have a free hop-on, hop-off shuttle service that will connect you through the community with transit stops, with the hubs that are in each community. And hubs are sort of gathering points within each community. The Garfield Park Conservatory, for example, is the hub for Garfield Park. And this makes getting around these communities very easy. You don't need to bring your car if you don't want to. Take the transit system, take the CTA, bring your bicycle. And the 7-day forecast is that the weather's going to be good that weekend, so count on it.
Well, that's great, and also good news for gardeners. This is Beth Bott sitting in for Mike Novak on The Mike Novak Show. If you have a question about any of the things we talk about on the show, you can call in at 773-838-WCPT. That's 773-838-9278. As you might have gathered, we enjoy music here at The Mike Novak Show. So we'd like to invite you to bust a move while busting up clay soil, courtesy of Cotton Burr Compost from Back to Nature. This all-natural product is made from composted cotton burrs. That's like recycling, folks, which will break up your soil better than your best breakdancing moves, and it will keep your pants cleaner, too. I wouldn't know. I'm not much of a breakdancer myself. And it will condition your soil. Cotton Burr Compost from Back to Nature is rich in protein, which is the primary food source for beneficial soil organisms. And it retains moisture like a champ, unlike peat moss, which is not always sustainably harvested. Find out more about Cotton Burr Compost and other fine products from Back to Nature at backtonaturecompost.com. Pesci.com. Dr. Wally at Pesci's in Des Plaines and Mike himself both love them, so give them a try. And I will say that I use this stuff. One of the things I use it for is mulching in containers over the summer. That really helps to keep your containers moist. And this is a really fine but very effective mulch for containers. Back to Nature products are available at Knuppers Nursery and Landscape in Palatine, Illinois, Castle Gardens in Volo and Richmond, Illinois, and Bob's Salt and Feed in West Chicago, Illinois. So, get bustin' with Back to Nature. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. We want to keep
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low-nitrogen, slow-release formula makes Milorganite goof-proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Available wherever garden supplies are sold.
This is Beth Botts sitting in for Mike Novak on the Mike Novak Show on WCPT. We have on the phone Mary Eisenbach from the Garfield Park Conservatory and Bastian Bauma from the Chicago Architecture Foundation. And I'm going to have to ask you to sit on the telephone a bit longer because we need to go to the Weather for Gardening with Rick DiMaio. Rick? No, Rick. Okay, well.
No, the phone just kind of sneezed and freaked out, and I think just hung up on everybody. Isn't that lovely?
Okay, well.
It's live radio, folks. Just keep talking, Beth.
Okay. Mary, are you still there?
No, they're gone.
They're gone. All right. So we do not have Mary Eisenbach or Bastian Bauma on the phone. We're talking here about the progress of the Garfield Park Conservatory, which suffered its awful hailstorm in the summer. Landmark gathering place for gardeners in the Chicago area. I did, Master Gardeners meet there. They have this wonderful demonstration garden. If you're new to gardening and you're not really sure what you're doing, you can go to the conservatory, and outside they have a great demonstration garden where you can learn sort of the basics of composting. They have honeybees. If you want to learn all about raising bees and making honey in your own backyard in the city, which is possible, and you can go there and learn all about that. They have beekeeping classes. There are also a lot of other gardening classes. I know they have a composting class coming up. In the next couple of weeks, I think on October 22nd. You can find out all about that at garfieldconservatory.org. You can also find out what's still available for you to visit at the conservatory. And do we have everybody back?
Yes.
Yes, we have everybody back on the phone now.
Our Mike's going to just tease me. I can hear him already.
Well, but we have reachieved control over the technology here.
Yes, yes. So I have Rick, Mary, and Bastian all in line, ready to go, and let us know what's going on.
So, Mary and Bastian, I am afraid I need to ask you to hang on the phone for just a little bit longer, because we need to go to Rick DiMaio with the Weather for Gardeners. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Beth. Good morning to you on this beautiful Sunday.
Good morning. It is a beautiful Sunday. Is it going to be another one of these, like, August days in October?
You know, it's amazing, Beth. You know, last week we talked to Mike, I mentioned that we would probably have about five or six or seven consecutive days of absolutely beautiful weather. But what we didn't expect to have is eight consecutive days, this will be number eight, of 100% total sunshine.
Yes.
When do you think the last time we had eight consecutive days of sunshine of 100% in October, though?
I can't imagine. When?
In October?
In October, yeah. What do you think, Heather?
The 90s. Some point in the 90s.
Okay. I'll tell you right now, the answer is never.
Never?
Never done it. Never.
Never. Well, never since we know about.
Never since, since we began taking records back in the late 1880s. back then, the Weather Service was much more in tune with sunshine data, because that's pretty much what they were able to do when they were talking more agriculture. Because, you know, back in the 1850s, 60s, and 70s, Weather Service really only operated during the day, and that was for agriculturists. It wasn't until we had planes flying around that they had to actually have, you know, the Weather Service operating 24 hours a day. So going all the way back to the late 1870s, we had 7 consecutive days of 100% total sunshine. That was in October of 1934. That was the previous record. And from what I can see looking at the satellite, today is another spectacular day with nothing but the way of sun today. So that's going to break the record. And the record for any month is 10 consecutive days. That's back in 1917. And that was in the month of July, when you particularly have stuff like that. So to get sunshine this late in the year is pretty remarkable. And Beth, I don't think I've ever seen a display of fall foliage as I've had around, as I've seen around Chicago and area in 25 years living here.
I took a long walk yesterday, and I was watching leaves fall. I was watching these little leaves from honey locusts just sort of sparkle down to the in the sun, because the leaves really, you really see the color when the sun's shining through them.
Absolutely. I was up in the Forest Preserve up near Glenview Road, up near Hackney's. I don't know if you've ever been up in that particular area, but walking along the road and some of the paths, the bridle paths and the bike paths, with the sky being so deep blue and the honey locust being almost bright, brilliant yellow, it was just absolutely gorgeous. And we have another gorgeous day today. And you know, the amazing thing about it is this time of the year, Beth, we get about 12 and a half to about 12 hours and 45 minutes of sunshine. So you can make it up to 80 degrees during the day and then cool off into the mid to upper 40s at night, which is really remarkable. We really haven't had much in the way of humidity. The atmosphere has been very dry, and this is about as good as it gets. Everybody keeps saying, how long is this going to last? How long is this going to last? And it's amazing because you look at some of the observations, even out across the Central Plain State, and, oh, my God, some guy just went down the street on a scooter. I don't know if you heard that in the background, but clearly he needs a muffler.
Oh, yes, clearly he does.
Yeah. Well, that's awful for a Sunday. But this is just...
It has been very dry, though. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. We've had only about a tenth of an inch of rain for the month of October. But we did get a fair amount of rainfall in the month of September. It was scattered around across the last 2 or 3 weeks. We had nearly 2.5 to 3 inches of rain. Some places got, you know, some good downpours. So the ground, even from what rain we had in October, in August and September, is doing really well. The only thing that I'm a little concerned about is going into the growing season. We can use a little bit of sustainable rainfall here, but... I'm not going to wish that on us anytime soon.
Okay, and so for gardeners, you know what it means to me anyway is that I need to be getting out there and watering, especially evergreens, to have some insurance to make sure that they have plenty of water in their systems going into the winter.
Oh yeah, I think you know, something like that is definitely, a concern, I think, if this dry spell goes on another week or two, but I don't see that happening. There's definitely some signs that the weather may begin to turn a little bit wetter as we head into Wednesday and Thursday, and the pattern definitely gets a little bit more active as we head into the second part of October, but this is really one for the books. And, you know, looking back at Chicago marathon weather, this is now the 34th running of the Chicago Marathon. We didn't have one back in 1987, but this is only going to be the third time ever we've had temperatures close to 80 degrees. Now, back in 2007, when we had temperatures in the mid to upper 80s, we actually had a race time temperature when it was probably about the noon hour. I think we reached 87 degrees.
That was the year everybody was dropping from heat exhaustion, right?
Yeah, what was different about that year, Beth, we had dew point temperatures in the upper 60s and lower 70s. So at one point, the heat index value was about 95 or 96 degrees. You just can't run that much of that.
Yeah.
This year, though, the dew points were only in the low 50s. So that really makes the atmosphere much more conducive to running. But I have to say, though, for those people who are running, you know, the four and a half hour marathons, you know, once you get into that mile 22, mile 23, it's 80 degrees out there, and that bright sun is really going to keep things warm on your body. In other words, you're not really going to be able to evaporate the sweat as much as you would if you had a little bit of wind and maybe some cloud cover. So I really feel bad for some of those people who are doing this maybe for the first, second, or third time. This is going to be a stressful time with them, without a doubt.
And if you're gardening today rather than running a marathon, wear sunscreen, folks. Wear a hat.
Oh, you know what? Not even, you know, Beth, I have to say not even that. This time of the year, your sun angle is down to about, I think we're down about 47 degrees right now above the horizon. I was out yesterday on my balcony for almost 2 hours, and I don't think I got even a little hint of a burn. So I don't even think the sun's going to do much for you this time of the year. You know, if you're more susceptible to that, yeah, I would say so. But this is about as good as it gets. This is one of those days where I can't find anything to complain about. In fact, you know what makes this day even better, Beth, is that the Bears aren't playing. So they're not going to ruin our Sunday for us.
I know. I was a lot less stressed today knowing that I didn't have to race out of here to go try to get make it home for kickoff. But at the same token, Monday Night Football is a whole other kind of pressure, Rick. So you got to promise me some good weather for Columbus Day and Monday Night Football. And
Heather, the weather looks even better for tomorrow. For Columbus Day, you know, we're looking still at temperatures in mid to upper 70s. You know, the normal high of the year, the time of the year right now, is about 66. We'll make it up to about 81 today. This will be the fourth consecutive day, actually the fifth consecutive day, rather, of temperatures in the 80s. I'm not too sure of the record high for that, but if you watch me tonight at Channel 2, I'll be on 5 and 10. I think I may have some information regarding record temperatures in the 80s as well. But forecast basically is pretty good. Sunny, 80 today, near 80 tomorrow, probably near 80 during the day on Tuesday. And watching this weather system out across the Plains States, which promises some clouds and some wet weather on Wednesday, but still temperatures only in the mid-70s. And even after we cool off a little bit with that rainfall, we can easily stay in the mid-70s even for Thursday and Friday as well. So this is going to be a delightful pattern, something that we definitely are pretty much due, considering we had such a lousy last 2 weeks of September, Beth.
All right. Well, it sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to trying out my new electric leaf shredder.
Ooh,
my new toy.
And you said you'll be on today at 5, Rick?
Yeah, I'll be
fabulous.
On.
Fabulous. I'll be tuning in.
It's either 5 or 5:30. I'm not too sure.
Sometime this afternoon.
Yeah.
Depends on. I think there's a golf match going on. So it always depends on that.
Yeah. Say no more.
Unfortunately, what we won't see tonight at the end of 60 Minutes is Andy Rooney. Talk about the end of an era.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. As long as, I mean, forever. But
yeah, I'm
it'd be interesting to see what they do instead.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Mike Novak to grow some eyebrows like Andy Rooney.
He sure can rant like he can, can't he?
He sure can. Rant. He sure can rant. Well, thanks a lot, Rick. We really appreciate it.
Okay, and, talk to you later.
And Mike will be here to talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good. Have a great day and enjoy the sunshine.
You too, Rick.
You too, Rick.
So, Rick DeMaio Weather and the Mike Novak Show. Since we're talking Andy Rooney, let's go back to Sullivan. Why not? But we have a tip from our friends at the Care of Trees. It's still early fall, but you are aware that winter is an excellent time to prune your trees? Are you? Did you know that? You might want to think about getting some work done when the cold weather sets in. One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Because the tree is dormant and is less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. That's 847-394-4220.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
So, Mary and Bastian, are you still there?
Absolutely.
This is Mary Eisenbach, Director of Conservatories. Mary, you there?
I am here.
Mary Eisenbach, Director of Conservatories for the Chicago Park District, and Bastian Bauma from the Chicago Architecture Foundation talking about Open House Chicago next weekend. I'm going to ask each of you a question, put you on the spot. Mary, other than the Garfield Park Conservatory, what is the spot in Chicago you think people should absolutely visit next weekend?
You mean for Open House?
For Open House Chicago.
Oh, well, that's a great question. Well, I think the Center for Green Technology is pretty cool because I think green technology is pretty cool.
All right.
So I'm keeping it in the neighborhood, and I'm going to say CGT.
Okay. And Bastian, what about you?
Well, if we're going to stick in the East Garfield, North Lawndale area, I want to draw people's attention to the North Lawndale Foundation for Home and Square projects. The original Sears Tower is it at the center of that, and it is the only remnant of the former 3 million square foot Sears, Roebuck & Company catalog, warehouse, and distribution center in North Lawndale. It's a 14-story tower. And it is Chicago's only remaining Sears Tower, now that the modern Sears Tower has been renamed Willis. Across from it is a charter school called Powerhouse High School. It's a converted power plant for the Sears complex and now houses a high school that is LEED Platinum certified. It's a spectacular building, and it's essentially adjacent to the Garfield Park community. And it's connected by shuttles, and there's also a Blue Line stop there. The Holman Blue Line stop along the Eisenhower is only a block and a half away from this really spectacular collection of buildings right there.
And another site that's right near there is, pretty near there, is Christie Weber Landscaping.
Right. It's adjacent to the Chicago Center for Green Technology in an area called Rancho Verde. And right there we have a cluster of open house sites. In fact, there are 7 open house sites right in that immediate area, so it's easy to walk between them.
Folks, I encourage you to look at garfieldconservatory.org, which is the website of the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance, an organization that supports the Garfield Park Conservatory. Mary, you can join the alliance and be a continuing supporter, right?
Yes, you absolutely can. We encourage people to become a member of the Alliance. For instance, at our county fair event a few weeks ago, we had a number of people coming in to pay admission, and we explained to them that if they just, they had 4 people, if they just joined, became members, they could actually save money because members get to participate in programs and events for free. And for us, it's a great opportunity to carry on our conversation with people who might not be able to make it to the conservatory, but we can let them know about upcoming events. So, for instance, a lot of people don't realize that the conservatory is open, and they don't. So, for instance, our creature features that we normally have at the end of October, people know that we're not going to have creature features, but they don't know that we are, in fact, going to have creature visits on our typical late-night Wednesdays. So upcoming on October 19th, we're going to have some reptiles and amphibians at the conservatory. And on October 26th, we'll have owls and bats. So while the hailstorm has disrupted some of our events, the Alliance is, we're very aware that we have programming that people just love. So
right.
we're just scrambling to find ways to accommodate those.
Great for kids. A lot of wonderful kids programming. And you can find all about it at garfieldconservatory.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can find out about Open House Chicago at openhousechicago.org. I want to thank you both for being with us here today. There are a lot of links about all of this on my blog at growinginchicago.org and also on Mike's website at mikenovak.net. I want to thank you both for being with us here today.
If I can just have one
sure.
parting word, is that this Thursday, the 13th, The Chicago Tribune will be distributing a printed event guide for Open House Chicago in every one of its newspapers. That's nearly 500,000 copies of that event guide will be distributed this Thursday, the 13th. And to remind people that it's free, entirely free, through the generosity of Allstate and the Chicago Community Trust, that there are no tickets required and no reservations. You can just go out and explore your city on your own, customizing your itinerary that is easy to develop through the website.
All right. Great. So you have no excuse, folks, to stay indoors next weekend. You go to the conservatory, you go to any one of dozens and dozens and dozens of other great places. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thanks for
it.
Having us.
And our next guest is going to be Lynn McClure of the National Parks Conservation Association. Are you there, Lynn? No, Lynn's not there. Well, I want to tell you that this is Beth Botts sitting in for Mike Novak on the Mike Novak Show. Mike is off at his high school reunion today. So let me just mention that another thing that's going on next weekend is the Fantastic Fall Orchids Show at the Chicago Botanic Garden. You know, they have a whole lot of plant shows up there. They have dahlia shows and daffodil shows and all kinds of shows for these plant societies where you have these people who really, really love growing particular kinds of plants. And they are up there sharing their expertise. But the Illinois Orchid Society's weekend, the Fantastic Fall Orchids Show up there, is really worth seeing because you get to see all these gorgeous orchids. I don't have any orchids, but speaking of houseplants, I put up a blog post a couple of days ago on my blog at growinginchicago.com talking about houseplants because, you know, this heat, this hot weather we've had, that's really deceptive. You don't think about bringing all the houseplants in from the patio, but it could turn any minute. This is Chicago, and one of the things that happens in October is it becomes fall, and sooner or later we will have a freeze. Rick mentioned we've been going down to the 40s at night. That's kind of a stressor for these houseplants because these are tropical plants. They come from the understory, most of them, of tropical forests, and so this is the time you really need to be moving the houseplants indoors. You need to be checking them over for bugs. Look on the underside of the leaves because a lot of the time that's where the bugs lurk. I give my houseplants a brisk shower with the hose. If you're on a balcony or something, you can do that in the shower. Put some rags in the bottom of the tub so you don't scar up your tub, and give the plants a good, you know, a good bath, including the underside of the leaves. That'll go a long way toward getting rid of any pests. And make sure that you cluster the plants and so that they can sort of share each other's humidity, because any minute now, we're going to be turning the heat on. I know it's hard to imagine.
I don't want to imagine.
I don't want to imagine.
Not that. Like, I do all the John Lennon imagine for his birthday. I'm all for the trudging through ice and cold yet again. No, please don't make me.
Yeah, yeah. So how are your houseplants going?
They're going really good, actually. It's funny, though, because I've been waiting for them to renovate my apartment, so they've been staying with my grandmother.
Ah.
And she doesn't have a green thumb. She has a green arm. I swear she could bring dead plants back to life. So they're very, very happy. So hopefully when they come back home with me, they'll remain happy. Okay. But all of them are thriving right now. So that's a lot to be said for my working on this show, because I used to be a guaranteed houseplant killer.
See, there's hope for anybody, folks. Anybody can become a gardener.
Yep. I do have Lynn on the line, but I just want to let you know we're going to break for news at the top of the hour. So you got a few minutes with Lynn, and then we're going to have to take a quick break and then come on back.
Okay, Lynn, are you there?
Here.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm just fine.
I miss you, Beth. I worked so closely with you, and now I need to listen to you be doing this and read your blog so I can stay in touch.
Well, we're both in withdrawal because Lynn and I just finished working on a project about the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore. We were working on a report called The Future of the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore. And you may ask, what is the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore? Lynn, what is the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore?
Well, to tie back to orchids, it's a place where there are 28 species of native orchids. probably about 30 miles from where listeners are sitting right now, which is kind of hard to believe. It's a national park in northwest Indiana that is along about 25-mile shoreline of Lake Michigan. A lot of people know it as, oh, let's go to the beach in Indiana, but it's a beautiful, treasured place, 15,000 and some acres of beaches and dunes and unbelievable wooded, old wooded forests, and then, you know, dunes and swales, and the landscape changes so much. It's an absolutely beautiful gem that many people may know is there, but they don't go there as much as maybe they should.
A lot of people go there to go to the beach, but there's a lot more to it than the beach.
Absolutely. It is one of the greatest birding spots in the Midwest because of the, you know, Great Lakes, Lake Michigan Flyway. And this time of year, I would guess you could see tons of sandhill cranes, herons. I don't know. I think, a flycatcher in my backyard, assuming he's going to head that way south pretty soon. But that's the time of year when you can see hundreds and hundreds of species of birds migrating through. There are 45 miles of hiking and biking trails. And again, this time of year, it's really great to see the changing landscape, not just leaves on the trees, but the grasses and the way the wetlands look. There are just hundreds of acres of wetlands there as well. So it's a terrific place.
And a lot of Chicagoans are not even really aware that there is a national park. It's less than an hour away.
I agree, Beth. You know, I haven't done this, but maybe sometime if I have a spare hour, I will do it. But you know, if you walk down a street in Chicago or a neighborhood or whatever, and you
give me
25 people, the first national park they're going to mention is one of the big ones, Yellowstone. And if you tell them one there's nearby, my guess is they don't even know.
It's really remarkable because the national park was a lot of people from Chicago were engaged in actually founding the national park in the 1960s, including my mom. And you can find all about that on my blog post on growinginchicago.com. And we have here Lynn McClure from the National Parks Conservation Association. We're going to be talking a little bit more to Lynn about the future of the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore just after we break for station identification and a little bit of news here. This is WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, at 8:20 a.m. and a bunch of FM frequencies.
This is calm, it's gonna get you. Gonna knock you right on the head.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Back to Nature Compost. Life doesn't start with the seed, it starts with the soil. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Okay, I'm mad because I did just hit the button there, so I don't know why that didn't play when I wanted it to over John Lennon. Now I'm upset.
Well, here we are. We're mourning John Lennon today. He would have been.
No, we're celebrating.
We're celebrating John Lennon today because he would have been 71 years old today.
Yes.
Mind blowing. But we are shining on here at the Mike Novak Show. This is, as you may have inferred, not Mike Novak. This is Beth Botts, and I'm sitting in for Mike. He's out today. He's at his high school reunion in Michigan. I'm here with Heather Fry.
Yes, indeedy.
As we lurch into October, it's important to note that there's plenty of gardening left to do this year, indoors and out. We've talked about houseplants. We've talked about watering. You need to be sure that you're still watering in the garden right up till the ground freezes, which is why you need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Regardless of the season, regardless of the month, you will have information at your fingertips to show you how to grow healthier plants indoors and out. The September-October issue features berries, shrubs with berries such as viburnums, calocarpas, aronias, cotoneaster, and fringe trees, which make autumn glorious. There's a story about how to keep your containers looking spectacular well into the Halloween season. And in the interests of science, this issue of Chicagoland Gardening debunks 5 tree myths. There will be a quiz at the end of this show about those myths, or maybe there will not. And speaking of myths, there is a Mike Novak column on the inside back page. It's a myth, too, but he still gets paid for it. I'd like to point out that I also have several articles in the current issue of Chicagoland
Gardening.
You have
7 and he has a little quirky column?
I have several. I have several. I think I have 4, actually.
I'm standing by my articles. Facebook post earlier. I think you might know more about this stuff than he does. Just saying.
You know, I think he probably knows more about radio.
He's a bit of an entertainer.
Yeah.
So if you can blend gardening and entertainment, what do? You have your own radio show.
You have
and
your
name
own
it
radio
after
show.
Yourself.
Yes. So pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago, but it's a lot easier if you get a subscription and it will come to you right in your mailbox 6 times a year. And it will always be at your fingertips, including a great calendar of garden events and gardening themed events all over the Chicago area right up into Indiana and Wisconsin. So call 888-265-3600. That is 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
You can have a beautiful lawn and be kind to the environment too. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. A few simple changes in your lawn care practices, like using Milorganite Goof-Proof Organic Fertilizer, can result in a carpet of green safe for your kids and pets. Start by raising the mowing height of your lawn, if you haven't done so already. Taller grass is better able to compete with the weeds. Mow often, removing only 1/3 of the total height, and leave the clippings on the lawn. Consider using a push or electric mower. It's good for the waistline and the environment. Further improve your lawn's health and greatly reduce weed problems with proper fertilization. Milorganite's organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn your lawn even in hot, dry weather. Plus, you don't need to water it in. And the non-staining iron helps maintain the deep green color even in the heat of summer. So join the professionals and home gardeners who've trusted Milorganite for over 80 years. Use Milorganite for better results naturally. Available where garden supplies are sold.
We have a question here from Sandra Henry via Twitter, and her question is, how much should we be watering our vegetable gardens now? And, you know, the answer is, well, part of your vegetable garden's on its way out. But, you know, a lot of things like indeterminate tomatoes will keep going right till frost, so they're going to continue to need water. Any part of your garden that you're still getting a harvest from is going to continue to need water. All the fall greens that you may have planted just, you know, in the last few weeks are going to, of course, need water. And remember, you know, even though the fall light is not as intense as Rick mentioned, the soil's still drying out and those plants still need that water. So the parts of your vegetable garden that are still going, as long as they're going, they need water. We're on the radio here at the Mike Novak Show with Lynn McClure of the National Parks Conservation Association talking about this great national park. We have an hour away from us, which you can even get to by choo-choo train. Am I right, Lynn?
Absolutely. You can get to the park.
if you like to walk, you can get around in the park because the train will drop you at least one spot, at two spots, I believe, that are right in the park, which a lot of people don't know. And we hope that one day very soon we will get bicycles allowed on those trains so that once you get there, you can hop on the bike and hit the bike trails around there.
And you can also, I suppose you always could, but now you actually have a trail by which you can kayak to the national park.
Well, that is true, although I own a kayak. I'm not sure I would do this one. I'm a little sheepish, I think, about going that far. But there is now a national recreational water trail that goes basically from the north side of Chicago along the shoreline all the way around through to New Buffalo in Michigan. What you have to do to officially get that kind of a designation from the National Park Service as a national recreational trail is to have various spots where you can pull the kayak in, take the kayak out, so that somebody who doesn't want to do the entire, 80 miles or whatever it is.
Yeah. You would have to be young and vigorous in your kayaking to do that.
No lie. True. You know, Beth, you had mentioned that we worked on this report together, and one of the interesting things that we found that may ring true with gardeners, because it certainly did with me, is that, the park there, Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, is laid out in 16 separate pieces. It's long, it's thin, it has some disconnected parcels of land that belong to the park. And yet this park houses, hundreds and hundreds of beautiful native plant species. So what happens when you have this very jagged, long, disconnected border is that there are many, many opportunities with the private homes, the private businesses, the railroad easements, and the like, to grow all sorts of plants that aren't supposed to be in the area, non-native plants. And they have all sorts of little roadways and avenues to get into the park and dominate the native species. And over time, things like the pitcher's thistle, which is a terrifically amazing plant found in Indiana Dunes, they will get choked out by the non-natives. So when we were taking a look at this national park and about all the challenges it faces being so close to, homes and business and industry and development and what have you, we thought, okay, so how could you solve that problem other than putting vigilantes, at every single little place where the park boundary goes? And one way we could do that is urge the Park Service to do a boundary study. Take a look at where maybe some of those really strange edges could be smoothed out to help stem all those non-native species getting in. You couple that with big educational programs to the residents who live around there and to the businesses about things they could plant, shouldn't plant, and what have you, and maybe you have a long-term solution to what is a problem that's going to knock those hundreds of amazing species out of that park.
Yeah, because there are actually rare species, some species that are threatened in the park, plants, animals, and there are, as you say, it takes initiative by gardeners to be aware of the invasive plants in their own gardeners, in their own gardens, and to be sure they're not growing something that can creep out and get into the park. There are also opportunities for volunteers to get engaged with the park. The park would love to see more engagement from Chicagoans. Absolutely. And, get out into the woods, do things like pulling garlic mustard, which is an awful invasive weed out there. How can people get involved with the park, Lynn?
Well, there are a variety of organizations that are already connected to that park, the Dunes Learning Center, Save the Dunes, National Parks Conservation Association, where I work. Those are just three I can think of that have membership bases. And I will give the web address where you can find a link to this report that identifies all the wondrous things about this park, as well as the many challenges and the importance of kind of people getting around pulling together to help solve these challenges going forward. But you can do it simply by, you know, going online and Googling any one of the three of these organizations and seeing, you know, what they do and how you can get involved with them. There are invasive plant management groups. There's Nature Conservancy is very active on the ground. I mean, there's a ton of ways if you just Google an organization or a Northwest Indiana Volunteers and see what pops up.
Yeah, and I will put some links on my blog at growinginchicago.com, and we'll also make sure that they get up on mikenovak.net, which is the website for this show. And, you know, I really urge Chicagoans who haven't discovered this park yet or who haven't discovered that there's a lot of national park south of the beach to get out there and explore and, you know, take some of the tours, take some of the hikes, and actually, you know, find out what's out there. Because it's really kind of amazing to realize that within, you know, within an hour of what is it, 12 million people we have in the Chicago metropolitan area? Mm-hmm. Within an hour, or well, depending on where you live, but within an hour of downtown Chicago, there is a national park. We have our own Yellowstone, our own Yosemite. All right, maybe not quite that dramatic of a landscape, but it's a wonderful landscape. It's a beautiful landscape that's fabulous to visit at any time of the year. It's wonderful in winter. The whole thrust of this support was that this park, you know, really needs people to know about it and love it and engage with it and help it out. The link to the report is on my on a blog at my blog at growinginchicago.com. I will put up a post with all the relevant links there and on mikenovak.net. And is there anything else you want to say to us, Lynn, about the park?
You know what, Beth, just to leave people with this, I mean, Congress saw fit to designate 395 of these special places throughout the gigantic United States. And we have one of these wondrous national parks very nearby. It belongs to all of us. It belongs to all Americans. And people ought to see and experience firsthand what belongs to them.
And so this is Lynn McClure from the National Park Conservation Association talking about this fabulous national park, the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore. Just Google that. You'll see all kinds of stuff. If you go to Flickr and you search for Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, you will find all sorts of wonderful pictures to give you a hint of what this park is like. And you know, a lot of people say they don't even know the park is there, because if you're driving by on Interstate 94 or Interstate 90, you could miss it among all the steel mills and so forth. People think of Northwest Indiana as being this industrial area, and they don't realize that tucked in among all those steel mills, there is this just gem of a national park. Obviously, I feel very strongly about it. I've been hanging out in the dunes since I was a small child. My mother had me, my mother Lee Botts had me engaged in the drive to start the national park from a very early youth, not, you know, necessarily on a voluntary basis, but you know, my mom was the kind of mom who, you know, some moms would say go out and play, and my mom would say go out and pass a petition. So, and again, there's a blog post about this at growinginchicago.com. This is WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk at 8:20 a.m., and I am Beth Botts sitting in for mikenovak.net. Thanks very much, Lynn, for being with us on the radio. You can hang around on the telephone if you want to, or not, as you choose. What are you going to be doing today?
Well,
Funny you'd mention that. I am doing a lot of outdoor garden maintenance today. Actually, I've got a giant vegetable garden, and I'm going to pick the last of the tomatoes that look like they're maybe going to be something, and get rid of the, start composting the cucumbers that got left to rot because they were too big and those kinds of things.
Well, that is a great segue into our next guest. Our next guest is going to be Angela Mason from the Chicago Botanic Garden.
We actually have a listener online, Benita, calling us from Skokie, who's been out to the park you ladies have been discussing and has something she'd like to share with you.
Well, Benita, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Tell us, what have you got to say?
Well, what I have to say is a friend and I, she was my social director, I should say, because I never had time, nor do I, to plan things. We planned a reverse circle tour. And we camped overnight at the Indiana. Within a camping ground area. And we stayed overnight at the Indiana National Dunes State Park. It is magnificent. It is breathtaking. You just are awed by it. It's the best thing I can describe it. I mean, it's these huge mountains of like sand, and it's just. It's such a gorgeous way. I'm so glad we did the tour in reverse because it's things I never had the chance to see and really, really enjoyed that. It's beautiful. The south side of Lake Michigan shore is just breathtaking beyond words.
And before you did that tour, did you know the park was there?
No.
No?
No. Had no idea. And you talking about it brings such good memories to me in my mind of us doing that.
Well, that's really wonderful, Benita, and we thank you for calling in with those memories.
I also was yesterday at the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve yesterday,
yes.
And the leaves are changing, and that's just equally beautiful, too.
So, folks, get out there, get out of the house,
do
enjoy
it.
The leaves.
Yeah. It's not that far.
It's not that far.
No, and
neither,
enjoy it while it's warm enough to do it, you know,
yeah.
before it
yeah.
gets cold and they're still on the trees. Because a few more weeks, those trees will be naked.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
so
true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Benita, thank you so much for calling and for listening.
Then.
We appreciate it.
Thank you for bringing back good memories to me.
Aw, you're
thanks
welcome.
Much.
Oh, I love our listeners. They're so sweet.
I love our listeners. Our next guest is Angela Mason, Director of Community Gardens for the Chicago Botanic Garden. She's in charge of a couple of programs called the Green Youth Farm and Windy City Harvest that really try to get more trained people in urban agriculture ready to go in the Chicago metropolitan area. Are you there, Angie?
Yes. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you for making me get up here to the Chicago Botanic Garden today to do this interview. I actually took time to walk around this morning, and the leaves are changing. It's so beautiful. I heard you and Rick early this morning talking about the leaves changing, and it's spectacular. So get up here if you have a chance this weekend. It's amazing.
The Chicago Botanic Garden is in Glencoe. You can find out more about it at chicagobotanic.org. So, Angie, I asked you on the radio today to talk to us a little bit about what you do up there and also to actually get down to the nitty-gritty and talk some gardening here, and specifically to talk about fall and winter vegetables. So, you're in charge of helping people learn about how to raise vegetables, right?
Yes, I have two different programs you mentioned. One is the Green Youth Farm program, and we work with teenagers. We have four different sites. We work with about 75 teenagers over the course of the growing season, learning about everything from starting seeds in the ground to transplants to maintaining the garden, selling the vegetables at farmers markets, and eating the food that they're growing. So we do that from mid-May through mid-October. And then I also have the Windy City Harvest Program, which includes our garden at the Cook County Sheriff's Boot Camp. And we have We have 15 adults in our Windy City Harvest program. Our graduation is next week. It's a 9-month program, and it's all about vegetable production.
And if you see a career future for yourself in urban agriculture, you might actually want to take the Windy City Harvest program. You can find out more about that at chicagobotanic.org. But Angie, let's talk about vegetables.
Okay.
We had a question from a listener on Twitter, and the question is, where is the best spot for a cold frame? Are there easy ways to build one? And what could you grow in one? What's the whole point of having a cold frame at this time of year?
Well, believe it or not, you can grow a lot of vegetables this time of year in the Chicago area. You know, if you there are do-it-yourself websites for building cold frames, and you know, depending on how much land you have or how much space you have, you know, you can go everywhere or do everything from using a greenhouse to which is high energy, high cost all year round production, to hoop houses, which are, you know, they can be sizable, but they're low energy, lower cost, and still do year round production, to things as simple as using cold frames and even milk jugs
yeah,
to grow year round. And, you know, there are crops, a lot of different crops that you can grow. You can grow spinach and arugula, Swiss chard, kale.
And it's not too late to be actually planting those, especially in this warm weather, am I right?
No, it's a good time to start planting. We've just finished putting up our little low tunnels at the college, and
And tell us what a low tunnel is.
It's only, you know, about 3 feet tall. We use PVC to make the hoops, and then we cover it with plastic. Right now, you know, you cover it with Agribond. You don't need, or a floating row cover. You don't need as much protection. It's really to protect against, you know, those threats of frost and the cool nights.
Mm-hmm.
As it starts to get colder, you can then switch to plastic and, you know, grow some things year-round or even store some of your root crops to have and harvest through the winter months.
Because if you planted root crops in the fall, you know, I think further south you can just kind of leave them in the soil and maybe mulch over them and still be able to harvest them in the middle of winter. Around here, the ground is going to freeze, which is going to make it hard to get your turnip out.
Right. So you want to protect the ground from freezing all the way. So you put a good layer of mulch down and, you know, put a little low tunnel or a little cover over it to help prevent the ground from freezing. And you can do the same thing here and harvest carrots and December.
Let's go back to talking about greens. The difference between, as I understand it, the difference between being able to grow greens in the winter and being able to grow things like tomatoes is, first of all, that tomatoes are a tropical crop or a semi-tropical crop, peppers, things like that. They really need the heat of the summer. But the other thing about greens is you're not actually eating the fruit. You're just eating the leaves.
Right.
So why is that possible to do in the fall and winter and growing something bigger isn't?
Well, part of it has to do with sunlight and having enough daylight hours to get the vegetable to produce what it's supposed to produce. And, you know, lettuces and greens are lower energy. You're not expending a lot of energy into producing a fruit or a vegetable. The other thing is the leaves of things like kale and collard greens and that can freeze. They can tolerate a freeze. and actually taste better after a frost. You know, there are a lot of people who say they don't like Brussels sprouts. Part of the reason is they've never had them, you know, after they've gone through a frost. You know, a tomato or a pepper, eggplant, they're not going to tolerate a freeze at all. So,
but the Brussels sprout actually changes flavor.
Oh, it turns almost sweet. You lose all of that bitterness, and they're amazing in the winter months. And full of nutrition.
And full of nutrition, absolutely.
Even with the bacon.
Bacon makes everything better. Everything's good with bacon.
Everything's good with bacon. That's right. And I like to, I didn't discover this for the longest time. You know, I grew up my heritage on my mother's side is from Oklahoma. And the only thing we ever knew to do with Brussels sprouts was basically to boil them to death. Uh-oh. And eventually I discovered that you can actually like slice them and saute them,
mm-hmm.
or you can roast them, like, you know.
We steam them. I steam them for my kids, a little, you know, just a pinch of salt, and they devour them. So if you cook them the right way and they're not that funny mush, they won't carry all that childhood stigma of Brussels sprouts.
Like smelling
they
like
can
sulfur.
Be brought yeah. to life, you
they
know.
They can be brought
yeah.
to life.
And get the youth to eat them, which is usually the tricky part. Cheese right. and salt always works.
So what are you harvesting now at the Green Ruth Green Youth Farm and Windy City Harvest and selling at the farmers markets?
Well, this time of year we're trying to salvage every tomato we can. you know, we heard Lynn saying she was going to go and take all of the tomatoes that were even potentially ready for harvest. So we're salvaging every little thing like that we can, but we're also harvesting our squash and pumpkins, and this time of year is perfect for all of those types of, you know, those Thanksgiving meal crops, you know, the beets and turnips and carrots and all of that kind of good stuff. Our lettuce this time of year is perfect, because lettuce is another one of those things that it's not as good in the heat of the summer, so having these cool nights, it really brings the good flavor of lettuce out.
Yeah, and you can grow lettuce in containers. If you don't have a garden plot in the ground, lettuce is something that's, if you have a fairly wide pot, it doesn't really need to be all that deep, because if you sow lettuce seeds and you're planning to harvest them sort of as baby greens, they're not going to develop that much of a root system. So that's a really easy kind of vegetable gardening, even for people who think they don't really have space for vegetable gardening.
Right. There are a number of things that you can grow on your balcony in a container, even through, you know, November. As long as the container hasn't frozen through all the way, you can grow. There's even a carrot, a little thumbelina carrot that's a round, or a Paramax carrot. They're small, round carrots that you can grow in really shallow soil. This chard is beautiful in the bright lights of this chard.
Oh, yes. That's the one that has all the, some of the stems are red, and some of the stems are yellow, and some of the stems are orange.
Yeah, you can really make beautiful fall containers with vegetables that you can harvest and eat, too. So,
and the key there is that the container, if you're growing into the fall, is that the container is big enough, right?
Right, right. Because, or that it's protected.
It's protected somewhat. Because you don't want the soil to freeze.
Right.
And the larger the volume of soil in the pot, the more it's going to resist freezing. If you just, you know, plant a little tiny flower pot, it's going to freeze like the first night we have frost.
Right.
And when is our normally, when do we normally get our first frost?
Mid-October. So we should have a frost any day now.
I'm not
asking for it.
it doesn't seem very probable at this point.
I'm wearing flip-flops right now. It's
October. I know. We've had frost as early, you know, as October 3rd and 4th. But that's that's an early frost. I would say most of the time we get a frost by October 9th.
Yeah. Well, and today is October 9th. And
yeah.
So if from what Rick DeMaio told us earlier, it doesn't sound like we're going to get a frost this week. But that's why I have all my houseplants sort of halfway indoors because I live on the third floor. And it takes me a while to carry all those houseplants up three flights of stairs. And these last few days, I mean, some of these plants are getting sunburn. They're getting sun scald because they've been out in so much sun. And they're drying out so fast because it's been so warm. And I was like totally unprepared for this because I was in the mindset of, oh, my God, I got to get all these houseplants indoors because they're all going to freeze to death because we're going to have a freeze any minute now.
Right.
And it's not going to be any minute now, but October is a treacherous month. It can turn on you.
What is the key element in taking outdoor container plants and bringing them inside?
Well, you're not going to be able to take, unless you have a very, very, very sunny window, you're not going to actually be able to take vegetables inside.
Okay.
You can take houseplants inside. You can take some herbs inside.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say, Angie?
Yeah, if you have a sunny window. They're small enough. You can keep them on a windowsill and keep them going through the winter. They're not going to do as well inside as they are out. But if you have a grow light, I mean, that's another
right.
way.
Okay, because that's usually where my killing of plants comes into play, is not preparing for seasonal shifts properly. So then I'll bring the plants inside and I'll put them in the sunniest spot that I can find. But I think the air is different in there. The way I have to water them is different. And usually that's where I fail.
Yeah. Yeah. The indoor air is once we turn the heat on, the air inside your house is going to get hot. It's going to get dry.
Yeah.
And it's really hard for plants to survive that. And, you know, for vegetables, for things that you want to grow, pretty fast so you can eat them, the light indoors, even in a very sunny window, is much less than they will get outside because outside does not have a roof.
Right.
And so, you know, vegetables, you need to figure out a way to grow them outdoors in a balcony or, you know, on a porch. You need to figure out how you can grow them outdoors and find a way to protect them. Think about protecting them so that they're not going to freeze in this freeze that we, yes, will inevitably get, even though you are wearing shorts today. We have a caller on the line, Chris from Palatine. Chris, are you there?
Hi. You haven't talked about the great killer.
The great killer?
Yes, spider mites.
Spider mites.
And I gave up on, you know, houseplants because I had the beautiful hibiscus and, you know, did great outside on my patio, and I'd bring it in, and the little webs on it, even though I tried bringing it into the bathroom and misting it every week, you know, I just gave up. It just wasn't worth the effort anymore.
Yeah, well, spider mites can be a real problem indoors. They're not usually a problem while the plant is outdoors on the patio.
Oh,
because
no, but I'm talking about from about February, from about, let's say, October through April.
Right. Well, when you bring your plant indoors, you know, there are no, like, predator insects to take care of your insect pests. Spider mites do really well in dry, heated indoor air. That's a great environment for them. So they get indoors and they get into this really different air, and they and there's nothing to eat them, and so they really thrive. The best thing to do about spider mites is, first of all, to really be careful cleaning off your plants before you bring them in. You can wash them with insecticidal soap, which I would advise getting at the garden center. I know there are all kinds of recipes for homemade potions of soap to wash your plants off with, and I really don't advise that because you can damage the plants. You can wash off the protective coating that their leaves have, but if you buy a special insecticidal soap at the garden center, it can really help. The important thing with any kind of infestation is you need to catch it early, and you need to treat for it. You need to keep up with the treatment. Don't think, you know, doing it once is enough. So you want to keep watching those plants and making sure they're not coming back. And, you know, another thing that's really hard for people is if a plant is severely infested, sometimes it's worth it to just get rid of that plant so that it doesn't infest the rest of your collection. And just be willing to throw a plant overboard if it's like the Typhoid Mary of houseplants.
Well, I understand it, it seems like, I mean, you try trying to keep the humidity up in the house with a humidifier. You know, as I said, I would spritz it, the plant. You know, and when you have something that's about 5 feet tall, it makes it very challenging to spritz, you know, without totally destroying your floor. I was curious, if there's any fail-safe way, or is it just in the north we're just doomed to have spider mites and not even worth the effort?
There's no fail-safe way, although... one thing is that one thing that can reduce the probability is if you start with new plants, you have cuttings from friends' plants, and you know that those cuttings are not infested, and you start with new potting soil new sterile potting mix that you know doesn't have eggs in it. And you try to create a little bit of humidity around your plants. Maybe set the plant in a dish with stones in it so that you can keep the some moisture in that saucer, and it'll evaporate up around your plant. Make sure that the bottom of the plant isn't actually in the water, but or get a humidifier, find a way to get humidity around the plants, because spider mites really don't like humid environments.
Right. No, I knew that.
So, no, I can't promise that there will be, no spider mites in your future, but, it's always worth a try.
Well, I'll think about giving it another shot, but, right now, I'm just enjoying the outdoor plants, particularly the two hanging baskets I picked up at the members-only plant sale at the Botanic Gardens.
Yes. If you go to the plant sale at the Garfield Park Conservatory, you can also maybe start out with some pretty good houseplants.
I'd imagine those are the places you'd want to get plants from.
Those are places you want to get plants
from.
When
you and Mike gave me plants, I was like, oh, these are good plants. Like, I know that.
you want to be sure that
I am 100% sure.
You want to be sure you're getting your plants from good places. So thanks a lot for calling in. We really appreciate it. Angie, you still there?
Yes.
So what's your favorite fall vegetables?
Oh, boy. I have to say Brussels sprouts and Swiss chard.
And Swiss chard. And what kinds of plants have you seen people get into trouble with when they're doing their fall vegetable gardens?
I think a lot of people try to hold on to those summer crops a little too long, and those are usually the troublemakers. Everybody wants a good tomato, and it's you can't find those in December and January. So I think people try to hold on to those a little bit too long. The only way to get a good tomato in January is to can your own.
Yeah.
And then have them in January. But this time of year, it's time to start cleaning your garden out so you don't have problems in the spring with pests and diseases. And part of cleaning that garden out is taking out the cucumbers and tomatoes and peppers.
Yeah, because you don't want to leave the foliage in the vegetable garden because it might have pests or diseases or stuff on it, right?
Right, and it's a good chance to, now's the time to put all of that stuff into your compost pile and get some good compost to help build your soil for next year.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that you can be adding to the compost pile this time of year is leaves, of which there will be an abundance. If you look at the Chicago Tribune today, I have a story about compost and using leaves in the compost in the Sunday section. But Angie, if you are harvesting your tomatoes now, it feels like tomato weather. It feels like wonderful tomato weather. But you're suggesting people should get out there and they should get those tomatoes off the plants now, right?
Yes. Yes.
And will they actually ripen? If you take this green tomato off the plant, is there anything you can do to actually get an edible tomato out of that rather than fry it?
Well, I mean, fried green tomatoes are are a treat if they're done right. But you can also ripen them in a brown paper bag. You can actually take the vine if you have a place that is dry, and you can actually cut the tomato vine itself and hang it and let it ripen on the vine. Just hang it upside down in a dry area.
Just like you would hang a string of garlic?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, how
cool.
And let
the tomato ripen on the vine, and then when the tomato's ripe, pull it off and compost the vine.
Oh, how cool. I mean, I'm picturing this imaginary house that I have. in my imaginary house, there's like this whole room that's full of, you know, bunches of peppers and strings of garlic. And now my imaginary room is going to have branches of tomato vine hanging in it.
Yeah.
Because all I've ever done with my tomatoes is I've tried various things with my tomatoes. I've, you know, line them up on the kitchen windowsill, mm-hmm. and wait for them to get ripe. One year there was, I was growing cherry tomatoes, a lot of cherry tomatoes that year. And I, there was a frost coming or something. So I pulled all the green cherry tomatoes off my tomato plants, and I decided to try to make pickled green tomatoes.
Ooh.
And that was like the worst disaster of my canning and pickling career. I do can tomatoes and make jam and stuff like that. But the pickled green cherry tomatoes were like these horrible, soft, mushy things. So it was very, very sad. But Angie, do you have a garden at home?
No, I don't have a yard. I have a balcony that I try to grow things on, but you know, they say a plumber's toilet never works. a gardener's containers, when they're too busy, never work either. So,
because a garden does take a certain amount of tending, even if it's just in pots.
Yes, yes, and you know, I have all of the farm, so I can go and harvest and work in the farm a little bit. That's one way to get me out in the garden.
And is one of the things that you find when you're working with teenagers, do you find that they actually become willing to eat vegetables?
Oh yes, I think the first year of Green Youth Farm, we grew kohlrabi and
kohlrabi.
Not many people.
What is kohlrabi?
It's part of the brassica family. It's a cabbage. It looks, it's a very odd looking vegetable. and, you know, it was one of those things that we grew because we thought, well, this is a vegetable that most kids have never been exposed to. Well, I failed to mention to anybody that I had never been exposed to it either. So we were growing kohlrabi, and we kept letting it grow and grow and grow because I didn't know when to harvest it. And finally, when it was about the size of a volleyball, we harvested it, and that's way too late. And after that, I realized that we needed to add cooking classes to the Green Youth Farm program and get kids to eat the vegetables that we're growing and, you know, get me to eat the vegetables that we're growing. And, you know, like Heather said, you cover it with salt or cheese, and anybody will eat it. And yeah, that's kind of how we started, and it's grown from there. And we just published our first cookbook. So it's all of the recipes that the Greenview Farm students love to cook for their weekly meals. And it's a fun way to get kids exposed to trying new foods. You know, if they're growing it and maintaining it and nurturing it, they're more likely to try something new.
Even with really little kids, if you can get them started, they will eat the most amazing things. If they grew it themselves, they will eat radishes.
Yeah.
They will eat carrots. If you have them grow those little thumbelina carrots that you mentioned, which are sort of round, there's some really weird looking carrots. Kids will eat those. If they grew them, they'll eat them.
Right. And purple carrots. If you grow purple carrots and pull them out of the ground, everybody's excited about a purple carrot. I mean, when do you see a purple carrot?
I was very disillusioned with my first purple carrot because when you cook it, it just turns orange.
Does it really?
It really does. In order to really sustain the purpleness of them, you have to eat them raw.
Well, at least you can. But, yeah. I mean, just think, if you, like, me, one thing we've been doing with my son is Halloween sort of themed food and fun dishes. And I've been trying to branch outside of desserts because they get enough sugar.
Yeah, they do.
You know, and if I'm like, purple and orange carrots, those are Halloween colors. You can do something with that. Big Halloween colored salad or something. I didn't, truthfully, I learn something new every day. I didn't know there were purple carrots, to be completely honest.
There are purple carrots.
I thought all carrots were orange.
Well, I don't know, I will have to research this because I'm not even sure that orange is the natural color of carrots.
Really?
I think that, you know, a lot of these things like beets were sort of selectively bred from chard. People originally just ate the tops, and then they sort of gradually bred the taproot to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So a lot of these crops have gone through a lot of manipulation by humans since they have been domesticated.
Right.
Angie, do you have any advice for somebody who's like a beginner vegetable gardener in the fall, about the fall? A lot of people just kind of don't know, especially their first year, they kind of don't know what to do.
Well, start with good soil. It's always important to start with really good soil. Think of the soil as the vitamins and food for the crops. And, you know, try it. Just try everything. Read and try it, and you know, don't be afraid to make mistakes. It happens. You know, everybody has their first crop failure or their first crop success. So you have to experience both of those things. And take classes. We offer workshops at Windy City Harvest once a month. We just missed the season extension. It was last weekend, but there are classes out there, and they're geared towards beginners. And every farmer wants to see somebody grow vegetables. Everybody who is interested in local foods and organic foods and all of that, everybody wants to see more people into it. So there's ask questions. Everybody in this field is eager to help you learn how to grow. So don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to try new things, and just do it.
you know, it's like that houseplant with the spider mites. You know, sometimes it's just not going to work. You're going to get some horrible infestation. You're going to have to ditch the houseplant. But that doesn't mean you can never grow houseplants again.
Right.
It just means that particular houseplant didn't work out. And a lot of people, you know, I think they get started as gardeners, and they're so afraid they'll kill something. They're so afraid it won't work. They're so afraid they'll be like Heather and they'll have the black thumb. And Heather discovered that if she just tries again, she can have wonderful plants.
Well, the first houseplant I was ever given as a gift was an amaryllis.
Yeah.
Which is such a hard plant to take care of. They're telling me I had to put it in a paper bag and leave it in the closet
for
6 months. And it started germinating through the bag in my closet. So I was just like, well, do I bring it back out? And then I bring it back out, and it was me and the amaryllis. I was up at nights worried about this flower.
Okay, that was before you had a kid, right?
That was before I had a kid, and it was before I was a producer on a gardening show as well. So it was a real trying battle. I tied it to the blinds at one point because the blooms got so heavy, and it was like pulling the blinds up as it drooped down, and I was like, oh, this isn't working.
Yes, yes. So. Well, you know, and that's, you know, if you have, maybe the first plant you sort of accidentally got was a really hard plant.
Right.
But there are plenty of plants out there that are easy. Lettuce is easy.
Lettuce is super easy. I mean, the hardest part with lettuce is making sure you don't cover it and plant it too deeply. Now, you can't fail with lettuce.
You just plant it from seed and it'll grow.
Yeah.
This is the Mike Novak Show on WCPT, and I am Beth Botts sitting in for Mike Novak today. And we've been talking to Angela Mason of the Chicago Botanic Garden about fall vegetable growing, gardening, and growing. You can find about classes and plenty of information about vegetable gardening at chicagobotanic.org. Find classes elsewhere. I know there's one coming up at the Kilburn Park Organic Greenhouse on the north side at Kilburn Park. You can find out about that at chicagoparkdistrict.com. I want to...
Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come and wrap things up with Angie before we say goodbye for this Sunday. I can't believe we're almost out of time already. It's freaking me out. But before we go... We have a tip for you from the Care of Trees. Do you have tough clay soil? Does water run off instead of soak into the ground around your tree? Did you know that many tree care issues that you see are due to problems with the soil? The soils around trees in natural surroundings, like the ones in the forest, contain diverse populations of microorganisms and available nutrients that feed off one another because of these organisms. And he really wrote this in a lengthy, lengthy way. These trees tend to live much longer and stronger lives. The soils of urban trees are often neglected. As a home and tree owner, you can assist in promoting a healthy tree by maintaining your tree's soil. The Care of Trees has developed various methods customized to your property to help promote healthy soil environment. The Care of Trees shares your enthusiasm for the many ways trees enhance the quality of your life. Invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. That's 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
I'd like to thank all our guests on the radio this morning on the Mike Novak Show. We've had Mary Eisenbach of the Chicago Park District. We've had Bastian Bauma of Open House Chicago. We've had Lynn McClure from the National Parks Conservation Association and Angela Mason from the Chicago Botanic Garden talking about fall and winter vegetable growing. We'll put a lot of links from all the things that we've talked about on the show today on my blog at growinginchicago.com and also on mikenovak.net, which is the website for this radio show.
Yes, ma'am.
And that was Heather Fry, the intrepid producer of the radio show. And here we are at the end of the show, and as we do every week when Mike is not here, Heather and I are kind of vamping, waiting for
Angie.
The news.
Do we want to wrap things up with Angie? Angie? She's still on the phone.
Yeah. Got one last really short thing to say?
Oh, get out there and grow.
Yay! Oh, that's a good one.
That's
get
a good one.
Get out there and grow.
That's a great one.
Right, we might steal that, Angie. That's good.
Yeah, and you know, don't be afraid of it. And like Angie said, the really important thing is the good soil, because even you know, we were just talking about with trees how important the whole life system, the whole system of bacteria and fungi and microorganisms is, the same thing is true in your garden. You want to have lots of organic matter in the soil to foster that whole kind of web of life underneath the soil, and that's what will make your vegetable garden really successful.
Absolutely.
Even when you're starting in the fall. So I do advise you to, keep gardening even into the fall. Look into maybe some of these hoop houses that Angie was talking about, cold frames, floating row cover, right, Angie?
Yes. Floating row covers are a great way to extend your season, and lightweight and easy to do.
And you just kind of, when a frost is predicted, you can just kind of drape this stuff over your vegetable bed. That's why it's called floating, because it's not actually supported on anything. And it'll protect crops from a light frost, not a really severe frost, but a light frost. And if you just sort of alert to the weather, you can extend your season. Thanks for listening, folks. This is the Mike Novak Show.
Where we go green or go home.
Two, one, two, three, four.